The Cork Food Stories Podcast with Clara Cooney. A taste of Cork's food producers and suppliers, where every flavour tells a story.
Hello and welcome back to the second episode of this series of Cork Food Stories in collaboration with Cork's Red FM. I am Clara Cooney, owner of the gourmet grocer Deli and Catering Services based in Ribblestick in Cork, where a few years ago I took a leap of faith and changed careers, turning my passion for food into a business. Now, I've always appreciated the local food producers and how they're making a massive impact in the Irish food industry. So as you can imagine, talking to some of these amazing people and getting their stories out there is pure joy for me. I hope all of you got to listen to the first episode where I talked to Jason Bryan of Valley View Farm on growing a sustainable vegetable and free-range egg farm to provide amazing produce to the people of Cork. You can listen back on redfm.ie under the podcast section or wherever you get your podcast from. On this week's episode, I'm talking to Chris Fahey, owner of Wildflower Cork, which is based in Inishannon, a wonderful bakery full of the most amazing sourdoughs and delicious pastries. We talk about Chris's passion for using the best produce, how he got into business and building a sustainable business for himself and his family. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hey, Claire, how's it going?
Good. Thanks a million for taking time out of your busy schedule.
No bother at all.
To chat to you now today about life and, you know, your business, Wildflower in Inishannon, and how you got there and your future plans and everything that goes with it as, you know, being a self-employed business owner. So, now, like, I know you were originally born in Tipperary and you moved to Cork at the age of 18 to go to college in a very different career in, I think, building engineering. Is that where you went into?
Yeah, straight to it.
Yeah.
I was 17 when I moved to Cork and did engineering for about 4 months.
And you didn't last very long in that, did you?
No, I was only there 4 months. Just college wasn't really it for me. I wanted to do something else, but I ended up landing in engineering anyway, and I said I'd do it for a couple of months. It was more my grandfather was kind of pushing me to do something like that, something where the engineers, they get paid the big money. And like, he's a carpenter by trade, so he'd be pushing that kind of building work. But I tried it, and I didn't like it, and I just started working with food then after that straight away.
So you got in, you basically got into the food industry and you did a number of different jobs around Cork, both in kitchen though and barista. So you got a wide range of everything.
Yeah, once I left college, I just started looking for jobs in kitchens. My mother used to work in kitchens. She was kind of a cook and a cleaner. So I started working as a kitchen porter in Captain America's.
Yeah.
That's where I first started. And I was there a couple of years and I moved on to Long Valley. I was working there as a barman and I was in the kitchen as well, and then the gourmet sausage as well, and a few other different places. And then I kind of moved into coffee, and I was working in the bookshelf and Union Grind and Rocketman after that.
Yeah, because you got your love of coffee, I suppose, really when you started in the bookshelf, and you were managing there as well, weren't you? So you kind of got the whole idea of the running of the operations and how to run a business. I suppose that was probably the start of you kind of looking at what it would be like to run a business.
Yeah, I was there for 4.5 years, and I got there not long after Paul opened. He was open a couple of months, and I had applied for a job, and he got back to me, I'd say probably 2 months after I applied for the job, and I completely forgot I applied for it. And I was like, who is this? Who's on the phone? So I started working there then, and he was still kind of building the business in the beginning.
Yeah.
And after a couple of months, he ended up moving on to a different coffee roaster called The Barn, and it was really high quality, specialty coffee. It got voted best coffee in Europe. And there was a huge emphasis put on the quality of coffee and the meticulous details of making espresso. And we kind of, all the staff there were kind of learning a lot as that kind of progression happened. So I got a real kind of taste of it then, and my own idea of what business I wanted to open for myself kind of started to develop in there and started to change, because I originally wanted to open kind of a a sausage and breakfast place and serve cups of tea and fry ups, and that'd be a great one for me. And then the idea just started to mature, and I really started to get into coffee and kind of more kind of high quality products and using Irish products and all this.
Yeah, and because when did you like kind of really start like your love of understanding like breads and baking and all that? Because like you know it was much later on that you kind of got into the baking side of things, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it was about 2017 when I started getting into bread. I was doing a small bit of baking in Bookshelf. We used to make scones there, and I really enjoyed that process. And then I saw a documentary on Netflix called Cooked by Michael Pollan.
Yeah.
And just the way he spoke about bread and his kind of this obsession that he got with fermentation and the bacteria growing inside there and it's alive. And it just kind of inspired me to make my own sourdough starter and give it a go and see if I can make something of it.
Yeah.
And I mixed my starter, and it took ages for it to get going. And then when I made my first loaf of bread, if I saw it now, I wouldn't sell it to anyone. It'd be an awful loaf of bread. But at the time, it was the best loaf of bread I ever had, because it was properly fermented sourdough, and it was just flour, water, and salt, and I hadn't tasted anything like it.
Yeah. And it is so different, isn't it, to what you get in the mainstream of breads, you know, that flavor, you can get it straight away. And
I think you just get addicted to it then.
You do. And I think also, I suppose, it's so much better for us, for our guts as well. You know, we all love a bit of bread. Who doesn't love bread at the end of the day? But, you know, knowing how that's made compared to what other products are made, it's a really kind of a very different way of looking at making bread. And it is becoming a lot more popular now, of course, sourdoughs are, because they're definitely more interested in still having really nice food, but eating good food that's good for your gut as well.
Yeah, people are starting to listen to their bodies a bit more, because like regular white bread, it's built for speed. Like, they just want the products like made. They want as much as possible, made as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And through that process, you're basically just eating white flour, and you can't digest the flour. When we're eating wheat, we need to ferment the wheat because our bodies can't actually digest it. So from a white sliced bran, you're not getting any nutrition.
I know.
It needs to be pre-broken down before it gets to us. That's why sourdough is so much more nutritious.
I remember when I was a child, my grandmother, she used to have the white bread, and she used to put butter and sugar on it and give it to us.
Oh, nice.
We loved it. As kids, we thought it was amazing.
But there was, anything with sugar on.
Exactly. But there was no such thing back then as, you know, sourdough. We didn't even hear of it. It wasn't there for us. I'm sure it was, of course, it was happening elsewhere, but definitely didn't come to Ireland to the stores and stuff, and people buying it and people interested in it for quite some time. And was it always a dream of yours to kind of look at starting your own business, or, you know, did that kind of come as you grew your love for baking?
I always wanted to have my own business. I remember somebody asking when I was working in the pharmacy when I was 14. One of the pharmacists asked me, he was like, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to open my own cafe. And it just wasn't even a thought. It was just always like in my head that I wanted to do it. I don't know where it originally came from, but I say I probably got it from my mother, because she hates working for other people. So I probably just didn't want to work for anyone else. I just wanted to work for myself.
But also, I think, you know, it's a kind of a dream that does start when you're quite young, but you put it to the wayside. And I suppose you need to go and get that experience in life and in business before you can even put that into a plan properly, you know?
It's good to build the experience with all the smaller jobs and kind of do the hard work first.
Exactly. And great thing about you is that you were able to get that background from all the jobs and food that you did do in Cork. And, you know, everything from learning about the coffee and learning that there's unique ingredients out there and unique suppliers out there as well, that you can kind of start looking at your own. So when was it then that you really started to focus on, okay, it's time now? You were playing around, obviously, with the bread. You were obviously getting better at making it. And then you must have just said, right, I'm going to start looking at maybe starting my own bread business at this stage.
Started kind of in 2020. I started looking for apprentices for myself. I was actually approached by a couple of people who wanted to go into business with me, but there was the owner of Fallon Jam. She originally came to me because she wanted to leave Fallon and she wanted to invest in another small business, kind of a startup. So she's really interested in sourdough bread. So I knew her son and he kind of put me in contact with her, and we talked and we were going to open a business together. So we went looking for a venue in 2020. So it was towards the end of 2019, early 2020, when we started thinking about going into business together. And then we were looking for premises, and then kind of lockdown came and we had one place in mind that we were thinking about taking a lease on, and they were kind of pushing the lease. And it was like just before COVID was kicking off and there was talk about lockdown, and we just kind of, we backed away from it because we didn't really know what was going to happen with all that. So it kind of just, it fell apart then, and we went into lockdown, and I took weeks off work where I just didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And then I was speaking to Johnny O'Mahony from Pompey Pizza, and he came to me and he said, look, why don't you just like bake a few loaves inside my oven there? I'm not using it in the mornings. And the residual heat from making the pizzas the night before would still be in the oven, because he has a big
amazing
cement oven that he made himself. So I'd go in there early in the morning and I'd make a couple of loaves of bread. I was doing maybe 30 or 40 loaves of bread in the beginning and selling it to friends and family and whoever else would take it out of the boot of my car outside the Princess Noel. So that's where it all kind of started, was just selling out of the back of my car and kind of advertising on social media and word of mouth, really.
Do you know, that was amazing as well, because I mean, so many things, you know, with COVID when it happened, and you know, like you said, you took a few weeks off to kind of go, but there was a lot of people who went, what am I going to do? You know, there was a lot of places shut down. People started looking at better ways to get food as well. And you were able to do that, which was fantastic. So they obviously had the premises open that you were able to go in and make your breads and grow from there. And obviously people must have started hearing about you then.
Yeah, it kind of took off pretty quickly. Because yeah, like I said, I was advertising on social media and people had seen me outside the Franciscan Well, and there was always kind of people jogging around there and kind of hanging out, because it was like the middle of summer and the weather was lovely, and it was just a nice kind of a scene, just seeing someone outside the pub with the boot of their car and just flogging buns and making cinnamon buns and the sourdough. So yeah, it just kind of got bigger and bigger, and I started looking for apprentices again. And I ended up finding the one in Inishannon that we're in at the moment. And originally I thought it was too small. I looked at it and I was like, no, it's not going to work. And then I talked to my wife's uncle. He's in construction, and he just said, sure, look, if we cut down that wall and I'll just knock the back wall there again, and we'll make one big room and it'll be grand. And I just said, okay, let's do that. So, and the landlord was fine about it. He was just like, knock down whatever you want and make it bigger.
Well, that's so good, because you've got to have people like that to help you out as well. It's amazing. And, you know, sometimes we would have probably said no to premises because of, you know, you thought it was too small, but having somebody to come in and go, we'll fix it, we'll sort it out. So
yeah.
That was great. So that's how you found your premises in Inishannon, obviously. And when was that? Was that 2021, 2022?
That was it was the end of 2020, and I signed the lease in January 2021.
Yeah.
And then we didn't actually open until September of that year.
Yeah. I always remember you kept putting on your up on your social media, you know, opening date delayed,
coming soon.
I'd be passing in a shan and going, is it open yet? But you had great signage out there. Tell me about the name Wildflower, because I love it, because it's such a catchy name. It's a name that people just get. They understand what it means.
Very snappy.
Really snappy. How did you come up with it?
I had a couple of names that I was throwing around, and then I kind of settled on Wildflower because I was thinking about the wild yeast and bacteria that's inside in the dough that's mixed with the flour, and it was just wild and flour just came together, and it was just really, I don't know, there was something about it that just kind of clicked. And when I saw the branding, I was like, yeah, that's it. That's perfect.
That's brilliant. Was that the first name you came up with, or did you have another few before that?
I'd say that was the fourth name. I wanted kind of a French name originally. I was going to call it Pano 11. And then everyone that I said that to, they were like, you're going to call it what? Pano what? And I was like, no, I'm going to have to change that. So.
Exactly. No, the Wildflower is brilliant. So from January to September, that must have been a bit stressful for you, because it took quite a while with a few things. So how was that? Talk to us a little bit about like the process of finding the premises, and, you know, all you wanted to do was open your doors. So what was going on for those 9 months?
So for the 9 months, like, there was a lot of waiting. It was a bit of stress, right? But I was, I actually started working with Stone Valley, and they have a big warehouse in Bandon.
Yeah.
And I had already my oven ordered for the bakery. So what I did was I just set up the oven in Stone Valley's warehouse, and I just started making the bread and the buns inside there and just wholesaling it. And Stone Valley were taking buns, and Bean Brownie were selling bread and buns, and a few other cafes.
Brilliant.
In the city who were taking stuff. So that was kind of keeping me going. And yeah, I was just tipping away at that until DSD eventually got back to me. It was a good thing and it was a bad thing, because I kind of took the foot off the gas with the premises then as well, because I was making some money from the wholesale stuff, so I wasn't really pushing as hard as I should have been with DSD. I should have been like lighting the fire under them and ringing them every day, but I didn't put enough pressure on them. So maybe that kind of extended the time it took to open as well. But yeah, I actually ended up getting kicked out of the Stone Valley warehouse because the landlord said I was using too much electricity. So that kind of forced me to kind of move things along then in the Inishannon location.
And was the ESB, was it just because of, it was during COVID?
It was just COVID and lockdown. Yeah. And yeah, they just had a backlog of stuff. And it only took about 2 hours for them to connect it in the end, but they only had two jobs on that day. So like the staff aren't under pressure. They've only kind of a couple of jobs to do every day, and they're not, it's kind of a public sector job. So they're not pushing the staff as much as they could. Whereas like, if I was running it, I'd be like, look, you're doing five venues now today. They're not going to fall out. But sure, they just kind of tip away and do their own thing. They're launched it does.
Exactly. They are. But you got there. So you opened in September. And so what was your plan at that stage for the business? I mean, what was your idea? What did you want to achieve initially?
I wanted to have really good quality sourdough and just using flour, water, salt, no ingredients, no improvers, none of this rubbish, and just to sell some French style pastries there as well, like croissants, kind of chocolates. And the empire is built on cinnamon buns, because it's really hard to make money from bread, but cinnamon buns, they kind of pay the bills then.
Well, everyone talks about your cinnamon buns. They even come into my store and talk about your cinnamon buns. So there you go.
That's great.
So you opened up. Did you hire many staff at the start, or how did you start off? What was the plan?
How many staff did I have? I actually can't remember how many staff I had in the beginning. I remember Erin was there since the beginning. She's the girl that works at the front, and for the first couple of weeks, she was working on her own at the front. And I was so busy in the back that I say I didn't talk to her for 4 weeks, because I was just running around there stressing. And yeah, I eventually got some help in then. Shawnee, the guy who mixes the bread now, first now he does a lot of the prep work. I was good friends with his father, so I was begging his father. I was like, please send somebody in. So Shawnee came in. He just started. He didn't even have a trial CV, nothing. I was just like, Shawnee, there's the mixer. You need to start mixing bread.
Practice makes perfect, as they say.
Yeah, just jumping in the deep end there would be great. So yeah, there's 9 staff working there now. So start off small and it's big enough now.
Which is great. But when you first started, I mean, I know you always talk about using really good ingredients. So how did you source, or where did you source all your flour from, to ensure that you were like making sure that you had the best ingredient coming out onto the shelves?
So I started off working with Kells Wholemeal in Kelly. I was getting French T65 flour from them because we can't grow strong bread flour here in Ireland. So I was looking for kind of a good quality French flour to use that I could blend with some of the Irish grains that I was getting from them as well. And it was grand. It did the job. And we discovered Wild Farm Flour, and they're a company based in the UK now. They did start in France. It was started by a DJ called Andy Cato. He was one half of Groove Armada.
Oh,
So
amazing.
he just sold the rights to all his music, and he said, "You know what? Now I'm going to become a farmer."
There's a few people who've done that, actually.
So yeah, it's always kind of someone funny like that. He said he just lost faith in the system, and he wanted to, with sounding kind of cliche, he wanted to be the change that he wanted to see.
Yeah, and
So I thought he was a good guy that I wanted to work with.
tell us about his flour and his farm, and how he make how the flour is made, and why it is the best flour that you would, in your opinion, to use for the sourdoughs.
So a lot of it has to do with chemicals. They don't use any chemicals at all. No herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, anything with side is out. And he doesn't spray any fields. So when he's working the fields as well, he only drives over the fields with the tractor, I think it's 3 times a year, because that'll compact the soil as well. And it's bad for biodiversity. So, and he grows other things with the wheat as well. So he might grow beans, sunflowers, rapeseed, all in the same field as wheat. And an interesting thing happens with all these things. Like if you had a field of beans, a field of rapeseed, and a field of wheat, they'll all mature at different times. But if they're all in the same field, they mature at the same time.
Oh,
So the
yeah.
plants just talk to each other and they know what to do. So he actually harvests everything at the same time. And he can use all the beans and the rapeseed as well, because you can
Amazing.
split it out and just everything works together. The planet just knows what to do.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Nature, really, I suppose. That's it.
He just lets the soil do what it does, and it makes great quality flour. Because it's more, the flour is definitely more alive. It's like working with a fresh product rather than a dry product. I found that the French flour it was a lot slower in the sourdough, but when I started using the Wild Farm flour, the sourdough was nearly walking out the door. It was so active. There was just so much life in it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think it's so good that you're able to find people like that. I know it takes a little bit of time to kind of research it and, find the right thing that's going to work for your business, but not just your business, but also what your ethics are around the business and what you're trying to grow as well in the business. And you've a great following. It's not just in Ashannon, it's all around. I think a lot of people know about you now. I mean, I think your first day, wasn't it? You sold out at 11 o'clock in the morning or something, and had to close the doors. I remember when you put up the post.
We tried to do a soft opening in the beginning because we'd advertised for a big opening on the Friday. Friday, I think it was the 1st of September. And we did a soft opening on the Wednesday just to make sure like everything is okay. We can bake a couple of loaves of bread, the till works, the coffee machine works, everything is okay. So we did the soft opening and it just got mobbed straight away. People were just flooding in the door as soon as they saw the door open. And same thing happened on the Thursday. And then the Friday, the actual advertised day that we're supposed to be open, it was just like hordes of people descended upon us, and the whole weekend was just mad, and it kind of went by in a flash.
No wonder you stayed in the kitchen for 4 weeks solid without talking to any of your staff.
I was trying to
Do
nip out to talk to a few customers that I knew and then to go back and shape more bread.
But isn't that brilliant? It just shows you that how interested people are, what they want as well. So, by by having that, you obviously knew you were on the right path, you're doing the right thing. So you must have had to look at your business because, you know, as you said, like for the first 4 weeks, you were just a stress ball going, oh my God, how am I going to handle this? So what did you do? Like, how did you manage that mentally and making sure that, right, okay, this is, you know, it's working. So how did you get to the next stage?
Mentally, I'm very good at managing stress. I don't let a lot of things stress me. I'd say I've gotten more stressed about the staff politics than actually running the business. But the business kind of, you just kind of wait and see what the customer wants. Like, we get a lot of feedback from the customers. Almost 90% of our customers are regulars. So they'll give us a lot of feedback and they'll tell us what kind of breads they want, what kind of stuff they don't want, what pastries they'd like to see. And they're kind of happy enough with us experimenting as well. We're trying to use a lot more Irish stuff. Like this, all this summer now, we're just going to use Irish fruits. And we're going to work on a few new things. We're going to do eclairs and just see what works. Throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? You just have to keep trying and what works, works, and what doesn't, doesn't. That's it, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You're growing business. I mean, I've been down there a couple of times, and yes, for anybody listening, if you haven't been down, just a couple of things, prepare to stand outside and have a, you know, in the queue for a while, because that's what happens. But
it does
it's
get
fantastic.
Busy, all right, but we try, and get through the queues.
It does get busy, but you've got like three or four people out front now.
Yeah, on weekends, there definitely be three people, and I'd often go out there as well and pretend to help out, whereas I'd serve one customer and then I'd get caught chatting.
I think that's what happened. Yeah, when I went down there as well. We just chatting, exactly. Like besides the breads and everything, like do you look at, so you've got this the Stone Valley coffee, isn't that the coffee that you're using there? And do you have any like artisan products on the shelves? Are you like expanding your range outside of bread and pastries?
Yeah, we do a few kind of retail bits. All right, we stock all full on jams, and we've a lot of Irish products there. Basically, anything that you can put on bread, we kind of have that. We've got dips, and we've got sauces from Cork Chili Company, and we've got dips from Toon's Bridge and harissa and mustard and everything. So we're trying to keep a couple of Irish things on the shelf there. And we're trying to support other Irish businesses as well, like Aisling in Newfoundland Dairy.
Her raw milk.
Yeah, and it's lovely. I probably drink most of it, so I'm making no money.
I love it as well. And of course, it only has like a 3-day shelf life, the raw milk, so it has to be drank. So if it's not sold, there you go.
I've drank it maybe 2 or 3 days past its sell-by date, and it's still fine.
It's still fine, exactly. I love her stuff as well. And you have those beautiful dressings and balsamic vinegars as well.
From Wildwoods, yeah.
Yeah, I have those as well. They're gorgeous.
They're a great quality
seller.
If you can get in contact with him. He's kind of an elusive man.
I agree. He goes off and wanders. It could be weeks and weeks and weeks before you put an order.
He's off foraging the woods looking for foraging, stuff to put in his balsamic vinegars. Yeah.
Which is great. And do you do like anything like that yourself? Do you do any of the foraging? To kind of experiment in your food.
Wild garlic and blackberries now, I would.
Yeah.
Every time it's blackberry season, we just like go picking millions of blackberries, and then we have freezers full of blackberry jam.
Gorgeous.
Wild garlic pesto is the same. There's loads of that in the freezer. Yeah. I would like to get into it a bit more. We're going to try and look for more edible flowers, like wild flowers that we can put on the pastries now as well, just kind of jazz it up a bit. And show people that you can actually eat these things that are growing on the bushes.
I know, exactly. But it's funny, I have the same with the wild garlic, and a lot of my customers think it's, you know, what's at the side of the road, which is a form of the wild garlic, the long stemmed ones. And I'd be bringing them out, the real wild garlic, and making them taste it, and they'd be blown away with it completely. But it's beautiful. I do it now in breads and pestos and butters and aioli and the whole lot. So, you know, anything
great on
I can.
Pizza.
Exactly. I do the pizzas on the Friday afternoon, and people go, do you have here wild garlic? I always say, I do. I have it here.
It's lovely. There's actually a place in Shannon that it grows. I won't give away the secret, but it does grow in Port McSherry as well. It's a great spot for it.
Yeah. And there's a place in Kinsale. I won't give away that secret either. That's brilliant. So you're now kind of at a stage. So you're a couple of years into business, Chris. And what's next? What's the plans?
Well, plans for the business at the moment are just kind of keep going what we're doing. We're happy enough to kind of tip away and just develop products more than anything else. We could open up a big bakery unit somewhere and then open up 3 more shops, but it's really hard to get staff at the moment. And to be honest, I don't want the extra hassle of running all these other shops and trying to pay even more bills. So we're happy enough to stay in Main Shannon at the moment and just working on products for the shop there, and the people of Main Shannon could benefit then from more development of products.
Yeah.
And I have a new son as well. So he was only born 5 weeks ago. So Amazing. He's taking most of my time now at the moment. So.
And like, are you able to get a little bit of a work-life balance now at this stage?
Yeah. Like, I'm off Monday to Thursday at the moment, and I'm only working Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That's amazing. So obviously, like, you've got staff that you're able to rely on, that you're able to take those days off, which is fantastic.
Yeah, the staff are great inside there. Like, Shawnee and Katie and Aaron and my best friend, Chris Maxwell, is working there now as well. So it's a great team.
Met Chris a few times.
Yeah, it's a great team kind of holding the place together. So there's no fear of them. Like, Katie can do as many pastries as anybody I've ever seen. And Shawnee is brilliant to make the bread. You kind of trust them to just make sure everything is going to get done while I'm not there, so I don't have to be constantly worrying about it.
Well, that's great, isn't it? Especially that, you know, you've a new baby and you're able to spend time with him, and also for Michelle to have you at home a little bit to help out as well, because it's so new for both of you being parents. And
finding a routine.
But isn't it wonderful that you've come such a long way from, you know, 2017 of figuring out that you really liked baking to where you are now, that you've got a sustainable business up and running. You kind of are, you know where you're going with it, and you know, you're building a lovely business to support your family, which is fabulous.
I think that was the main goal of my business, is ideally I don't want to be working all the time. I just want to spend time with the family. So if the business can run itself, I'd be delighted with that.
Well, I actually laugh at your best buddy, Chris, who works with you now as well, because one, he's the head off you. You'd nearly think you were twins, you know. When he arrived at the door first, I was like, oh, it's not. And he goes, but I am Chris. And I was like, oh, okay. And then we just started laughing, but he was saying, you know, he's wanted to be in a dad. He's been talking about being a dad since he's 19 years of age. And I was like, oh, really? So it wasn't just a business goal, but a family goal. And it's lovely that it's all coming together for you.
I've been pushing Michelle now for years.
And that's fabulous. So, and you're living down in West Cork now. You've a lovely place down there.
Yeah, moved to Drimaleague this year. So we have a nice kind of spot around. There's just fields and cows around it. There's loads of calving season at the moment. So there's loads of calves in the fields. So it's a lovely kind of spot here.
That's fantastic. Chris, I think it's amazing. I love your story. And, you know, I only can wish you the best. Your stuff is amazing. It sells out in my shop as well, like your sourdoughs do. I think I'm going to have to look at getting your cinnamon rolls soon, because people keep asking me about them.
Yeah, the cinnamon buns are a big addiction.
They're a big addiction, exactly. And your delicious, is it your crumpets?
Cruffins.
Cruffins, that's it. Yeah. Oh. They're so good.
I could write a whole book.
Way too unhealthy. They're full of sugar, you know.
They're fine. It's regenerative flour. There's a bit of vanilla, a bit of rhubarb. Just one of your five a day at least.
I love it. Yeah, we'll keep that in mind. But look, this is brilliant. I'm looking forward to seeing where you're gonna go and Wildflower and how it's expanding, and tasting your gorgeous new. I know you're looking at the new seasoned strawberries now and bringing that into some of the recipes, which is fantastic.
I was at Bushmeade and Roscarbery already there. They could be dropping earlier than next week.
Wow, it's amazing, isn't it? They're all right, aren't they?
The weather's getting better, so we'll definitely have fresh strawberries from Roscarbery on the menu soon.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Chris. It was so lovely to talk to you. Wishing you all the best. And we'll talk to you again in when I see you next time when you're delivering the breads to me. Exactly.
I'll probably see you tomorrow for delivery.
You'll see me tomorrow morning, for God's sake.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But everyone, Wildflower is on the main street in Inishannon. So, and there's actually plenty of places that you can park up and go in, but do definitely drop in and pop in and get some of your delicious breads and pastries from Chris there. And also you can follow them on all the usual social media, Facebook and
Instagram is the main one.
Instagram is the main one, exactly. And
I don't do any of that TikTok. That's for young people.
We're too old for that. I do look at TikTok. I just can't. I just can't get my head into it. It's too much work, exactly. But exactly. So, you know, and you'll be able to see all the updates and all the beautiful products. So give them a follow and follow their journey and how they're doing. Thanks again, Chris, for everything. That was great chatting to you.
For more Red FM podcasts, go to redfm.ie/podcasts.